Once you understand something, you start to notice it and see it in the world. And I think that's the same thing of, you know, recognizing these things inside of us that are telling us that, you know, we're not good enough, or these certain kind of quirks with our brain. Once you recognize that, but at least you know it's there, and you can kind of go, okay, that's just that thing happening again, and then you can kind of walk past it.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview successful UX designers who fight for the user in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to episode 24. Today, I had the immense privilege of talking with UX principal and writer Francisco Enchoste. Francisco holds nothing back as we deep dive into writing, designing, and keeping it analog in our digital lives. With that in mind, I think you're going to love his answer to my question about recommended tool or resource. Get ready. So many good things about to come forth in my interview with Francisco Enchoste. This episode is brought to you in part by Universal Mind, a digital design and consulting company based in Denver, Colorado. Universal Mind helps your organization achieve its ideal state in a complex and ever-changing digital world. Today's episode features Francisco Enchoste, UX principal at Universal Mind. With nearly two decades of experience, Francisco leads the UM Lab, leading clients through a combination of user-centered design and the Lean Startup methodology to explore new business models. Learn more at universalmind.com. Francisco Enchoste has an extensive user experience background with a focus on interaction design. He's been involved with the web industry for almost two decades, leading teams and clients, enterprise to startups, on projects ranging from customer brand experiences to complex software applications. He's the UX principal at Universal Mind. He's co-founder of SimpleBots, where he creates apps like Rise. He helped start Smashing Magazine's UX section and still uses his superpowers to help edit books and review articles. He also used to work for the U.S. Postal Service delivering mail on the weekends. Welcome to User Defenders. I'm super excited to have you on the show today.
Thanks. I'm really excited to be here.
All right. As you know, we're taking a fun superhero theme, and every superhero has a secret identity and origin story. Let's talk about yours. I'd like to start the show by you taking a few moments to give us a look into your personal life.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a designer, of course, living in the beautiful state of Michigan. So I've been here all of my life, and I love it, and exploring and finding new things every day. Married, have four kids. So yeah, big family. I've been, as far as designing, I've been kind of doing that ever since I was a kid, you know, starting out just kind of sketching on every free space I could find on homework or notebooks.
Nice.
Some of the other stuff I like to do, definitely enjoy the local beers. Michigan and Grand Rapids specifically is the beer city here. So it's always fun to kind of see what's brewing nearby. And also a huge fan of this drink they call coffee.
Oh, bless the Lord. I love coffee. Huge fan.
Awesome.
So you got some good places nearby there?
Yeah, we got a couple of places that, do their kind of own roasting and, really kind of take it to that full art form. So it's fun to kind of go and see what they have in store that day.
Love it. Tell us your origin story, Francisco. What inspired you to pursue a career in this exciting, challenging, and ever-evolving field?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I started out more in the kind of advertising graphic design world, and I really kind of enjoyed the creativity and just kind of the freedom there that you have within roles, just to kind of explore the limits. And kind of as far as user experience, I think I've always done that in a certain way, right? You always have to, as a designer, empathize with the users and kind of understand who you're communicating to. And what I really liked about, starting to kind of look more into, usability and, how people are kind of looking at something like a web page, as more of a product, and I don't think we weren't calling it a product back then. Now that term is kind of something that's popular, but
sure.
Looking at it as something people are actually using rather than being talked to, and then understanding, all of the kind of like psychology and all these other pieces of like industrial design, that all these kind of facets of design that come together. And it became less about you going to a client and showing them something and saying, hey, look at this really cool thing I made. What do you think? And they're like, I don't like blue, or I don't like the picture you chose. You know, it became more of, you know, this is why this is a good, you know, solution, a good path for you as a customer, because, you know, the users will, you know, do this or that in response to what we're, you know, trying to do here in this task. So it had like a science behind it. And I really liked that side of it because it felt like, okay, there's something more to it here than just someone's opinion. So that's kind of where I really started embracing, you know, user experience and understanding, you know, trying to validate things more and really speak to design in a different way.
Love it. And back in the day, it was kind of like if you knew design, web design, and a little front end development, that was all you really needed.
Right.
But it's evolved so much that it's, as you said, you know, empathy, usability, psychology, those are additional factors that we really need to be aware of now in our work. And it's crazy. I mean, it's a challenging field. And like Zeldman said, I just got to interview him recently. He said, if you're bored, you might be in the wrong field. And exactly. If you're bored, maybe you need to learn something new. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No question there.
Yeah. So who's been the biggest superhero in your work and why?
Well, that's a good question. I have to go to Don Norman. I really like, again, his sort of approach of it is very scientific, and he's not a designer, as in, you know, you're not going to see his work on Dribbble or something, but I still think of him as a designer influence because he really thinks about, you know, the why, you know, why do people react to things and that kind of how your mind works and how you react to different things. And I know a lot of people feel like that's, very kind of a lot of theory there, and it's really high level, and they're like, I want to know the practical, you know, more of the practical things. How do I do that? But I feel like it's important to know like the big picture before you can come down to, you know, that tool level and kind of execute something. And so, you know, looking at his, you know, the way he shows how your mind processes things, I think it really can help you understand, you know, why someone would want to use one thing over another, because there's a high level of like this desirability of that product. And he kind of explores why is that product better than the other? Because sometimes you can have something on paper that has the same functionality, you know, for example, an alarm clock can have the same functionality across the board in different apps, but the way that you're interacting with it and the feeling that you get from using it, that makes the difference whether you choose one over the other. And I just like that approach. I think that's inspirational.
Love it. Great choice. Don Norman is really one of our pioneers of usability and user experience, and kind of before it was cool or hip or whatever, right? Before
Absolutely.
It really became a thing, he was pioneering that movement. He and then Jacob Nielsen, of course, as well.
Yeah, I had a small interaction with him, and it wasn't on a personal level, but I wrote an article a while back called, I think it was the Dirtiest Word in UX, Complexity. And it had a lot of his kind of, I think he was referenced in there a couple of times with some of his stuff, but there's a lot of other references in there. But the first comment on there was from him, or at least I think it was him. And he said, you know, something like, great read or good job or something. And I was like,
oh wow.
Cow.
You can die happy.
Yeah, I was like, I'm done. That's my peak.
That is awesome, man. And speaking of your writing, Francisco, I got to say, you are an excellent writer. I've been reading your articles, obviously, to prepare for this interview, and you just are a really great writer. And as a lot of my guests have pointed to, that writing is so important as a designer, a lot more than I think a lot of us realize, because it allows us to synthesize our thoughts and really even solve problems through that process. So I'm curious, and this is off script, but I'm curious, maybe even selfishly, what's your writing process look like?
That's a great question. I actually haven't written something for a while. I've just been busy with other things, and
sure.
I do want to get back into it.
Please
but
do.
As far, thanks. And, yeah, thanks for saying that. I appreciate
absolutely
the compliments. I guess really my process is, what do I want to learn next? And that's the most important thing. And it begins, I believe, in kind of a selfish way, because it's really about I don't feel like I know something well enough, or maybe I read something and I feel like their perspective might be a little bit off, or it's just something that I believe, you know, I started just kind of writing a lot. I started to feel like a lot of the content out there was saying the same things or focusing on the wrong parts of design, or they just weren't really kind of backing up what they were saying. They're just kind of making, I felt like they're making up pieces and parts and putting bad information out there. So I guess I wasn't seeing much out there. So I was like, okay, I guess I have to try to, you know, put out there what I would want to read, right? I want to put something into the world that I would find valuable. And if other people do, then they do. And that's kind of how that kind of happened. But my process again is just really, it's about learning and exploring a certain topic. Mm-hmm. And then I basically just consume myself with that topic. So I just read as much as I can. I look at every aspect. And I look at it as, if I were to put this out today, would I be ready? You know, would I be ready to kind of defend every piece of this, you know, piece that I've written? Would it kind of fill all of the holes of questions that people might have, or kind of say, well, what about this? And so if I don't feel that way, then I don't write it. And I just wait until I get to that point, and then I kind of move ahead once I have, you know, I feel like I have enough resources and enough in my brain to kind of communicate that back out to people in a way that's very clear. Wow. So, and just talking about tools, I write in IA Writer, just kind of that lets me focus on the content. And then, you know, I worry about the formatting and all that after.
Excellent. Well, thanks for sharing that. I mean, there's a lot that we can learn from your process. And I can tell you that the research side of things is so evident in your writing. Like, you really do, like you just said, you really learn everything you can, because it just comes through your writing, like that you have really dove into that subject matter and you bring that in to your articles. And so anyway, tying it back to what we do, I mean, that is a really great craft anyway, and discipline to know our users, the people we're designing for. So
absolutely,
that's a great parallel for you and for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. Awesome. Yeah, the best way to learn something is to, you know, to teach it or to kind of bring it internal and then kind of talk about it.
Oh, that's good. You may have even just titled the episode right there. Hey, Francisco, if you weren't doing this for a living, what would be your second career choice and why?
Well, I think it would be something in the movies, and that's kind of where my heart first kind of went when I was thinking about what do you want to do when you grow up, kind of thing. And I always have had this kind of connection with films, and on a personal level, because my dad used to take me to the movies, you know, all the time as a kid. And that was just like my favorite part of, you know, the month or week or however often it was. I really enjoyed that time with him. And just the fact that I could go to kind of a different world and experience, you know, this story. And I thought, I got to be involved in this somehow. So that's kind of where I started to kind of have a lot of interest, but then it's kind of led into, you know, design and, you know, technology. So I think that would probably be something in the movies.
I love that answer. I'm a huge movie buff myself. And in fact, I would get to work at a place that does the previews before the movies, the first look show.
That's great.
And having that little free pass is really exciting as well. But when you're absolutely a family man, you don't get to use that as much. It's like living next to the beach. You don't go as much, maybe. I don't know. But anyway, I love that. I love your answer. And because much of what we do is storytelling, right? I mean, we're trying to tell a story. We're trying to bring a transformation into our users' lives and into our businesses' lives as well. I mean, I think that we forget sometimes as designers, we can tend to forget that we're actually designing for our businesses too.
Right. Speaking of storytelling, I think that's going to become, you know, a bigger part of what we're doing, and just in kind of talking about an experience. I think they're going to have to become more of a story, and, you know, kind of talking about some of the, you know, UX things and where things are going. I think that we'll see more of that.
I couldn't agree more. Francisco, let's talk about life-altering experiences and get into your transformation, speaking of transformation. Now, every superhero goes through some sort of life-altering experience that helps guide their purpose and leads them to a transformation where they realize the powers they have and they harness them for the greater good. Now, certainly a significant among those is failure. Failure is not something we like to talk about or put on our LinkedIn page, but it's unquestionably one of life's greatest teachers. Could you tell us a story about what's been your biggest one in your career?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to say it's with launching Rise. Even though, you know, there was recognition there, I learned a lot about kind of being prepared for different scenarios. And some of it, you know, kind of looking back at it is like, oh, man, I can't believe that happened or we missed that. So when we were designing it, it was kind of focused on, you know, a lot of different aspects of it. So like gestures and getting certain things right and kind of the look and style of how we wanted the interactions to occur. But when we launched it, we discovered through a lot of feedback, immediate feedback, that people were having issues because it was going to countries around the world, of course, and they were having issues with how the characters displayed and just the time formatting. And there were a lot of issues with that. And it was kind of like sort of a, you look back at that and go, how the heck did we miss that? I mean, that is a big miss. And it was kind of a scramble at that point because it was kind of like that launch week. Everyone was downloading it. And I felt kind of pretty terrible about it because it is sort of like I didn't even look at through the user's eyes. I focused on some things for the user, like interaction level, but I didn't think it all the way through. And, you know, for me, I just, it felt like, man, this is such a huge miss. We should have tested it, you know, in more languages. We should have thought about the fact that they're, you know, Arabic characters, you know, display a certain way and, you know, the kind of left to right reading and just all these different issues that I felt we could have covered. We were able to kind of sort it out and, you know, with a lot of work, go through and just, you know, kept changing the settings, you know, changing different languages, looking at it, previewing and make sure, you know, looked okay. But, you know, kind of a lesson there is, you know, not to focus just on maybe some of the kind of surface level or get excited about that we're launching an app, but to think through, like, what is that total experience going to be like and try to capture as much as you can before it gets out there. Or the alternate would be to kind of make sure that you kind of push something out in a smaller kind of push to kind of test that out and, you know, catch all those little issues. So for me, that was kind of a real kind of a, you know, punch in the face, like, oh, you know, I got to change the way I do these things and think about things. So took that away.
Well, Francisco, I appreciate you sharing that and your vulnerability behind it. Because I mean, it's a great app. I saw the app and it's beautiful. And you guys put a lot of thought and work into the aesthetic and the UI. So I appreciate you sharing that story. And I wanted to say just about the takeaway about testing with your audience, with your market, and how important that is. And the good thing is, I mean, obviously you guys got a lot of great feedback from very prominent and prestigious tech blogs and things like that about the app. So that was great. I mean, that's definitely a win. And but I think that the fact that the humility you have and I think you're a partner too, you partner with somebody on this, right? Being able to step back and go, you know, we need to fix this stuff that we didn't see at first. And that's the beauty of this field, is that it's not like print where we take it on the press and it's done, it's over, right? Like, we have the ability to iterate and to constantly be improving it.
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about software. And you know, Kellen is the guy, kind of he does a lot of the code and he also does a lot of the interaction work. And so, you know, we're always thinking about how do we simplify this thing, even, you know, take something away from it. If we're going to add something, I want to make sure we're taking away something also at the same time. I have this sort of like, what's the value of this on, you know, kind of showing this on screen or having this interaction? It has to balance out. You just can't keep adding things. So I think, you know, we both understand that and try our best to do that.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, maybe it's just doing the thing that it's supposed to do, making that as easy as possible, and then having that layer of discoverability, as Don Norman puts it, within the app for folks that want to go deeper and maybe like to explore a little more, right?
Right.
Things like that. Awesome. Yeah, some very cool gestures in there. Do you have a story of something really crazy or super awkward that happened during user testing?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I don't do as much of that just in my new role. Just in the past couple of years, I've been more in a leadership role. But I've heard some really good stories, you know, within some of the ethnographic research that we were doing for a retail store. And they kept finding these abandoned shopping carts that were full of groceries. And they kind of looked into that and they discovered it was because they had some elderly people in the area would come in and they kind of pretend to shop. And it was just so they could feel kind of part of society and for culture, you know, the culture around them. They wanted to just feel part of that, you know, the people and the things that were going on. So it was kind of interesting to see, you know, how like really it's like looking at how people think and how that, in this case, you know, they're just kind of lonely. They wanted to be around. Makes me kind of sad.
It's incredibly sad. But that's fascinating at the same time.
Absolutely.
Wow. So I feel like, and I'm not gonna preach or pontificate too much, but I feel like in some ways our culture and our society with technology is kind of heading in a direction that may not be healthy from a social standpoint. And I feel like the more connected we are, the more lonely we are in some ways as well, because we're kind of missing that authentic connection where you have elderly people going to a grocery store, spending money that they probably don't have a lot of money to spend, just to shop to be around other human beings. So I just feel like there's something there that we can all maybe just sort of internalize a little bit and kind of take away in that way. So that's cool. Wow, interesting. This episode is sponsored in part by User Testing, the fastest and most advanced user experience research platform on the market. There's nothing like watching and hearing from people using your product, and that's exactly the insight User Testing gives you. You get valuable feedback on websites, mobile apps, and prototypes from real people in your target audience. Set up your study in minutes and get video, written, and audio feedback in an hour. You can try user testing for yourself for free by visiting peak.usertesting.com. Peak gives you a free 5-minute test on any website or app. Francisco, what's your design superpower?
Well, I like to look at it as basically having anything that causes friction for the user that I find and making that disappear. So to me, that also includes the design itself. So any of the navigation or artifacts on the screen should sort of blend into the background. So it's really trying to kind of guide them or give them only what they need at that moment. So just sort of getting rid of those roadblocks.
That's a great superpower. Now, adversely, what's your design kryptonite?
There's, I think, two things. So I'll say validation. And that's on a client level and a personal level. So sometimes you have, you know, clients where, you know, they're just excited about certain features and they want to get right in and just start building those rather than stepping back and going, okay, so let's validate this first. And on a personal level, I've done the same thing. So I understand how difficult it is. And that's kind of one of the reasons I built Rise, is because I wanted to build my own product so I understood how a client would feel in, you know, taking out things and not doing something right away until you understood if it made sense or not. And so I wanted to understand what that felt like. And, you know, I wanted to do the same things that you see clients do. And you're like, you kind of, you know, kind of say, well, why do they want to do this? It doesn't make sense. They're just jumping in. But you can't help it. You get excited about that idea, right? The idea is that kind of spark and you're inspired and you just want to go for it. And then it kind of comes out at the end that, well, maybe that wasn't the best idea. You should have validated that first. So it is hard to stop and go, okay, let's take a moment and kind of evaluate things and do some little research and talk to some people and kind of figure out if we're doing the right thing.
Oh, that's such a great, great lesson for all of us. And I feel like the design is done, so to speak, when there's nothing left to take away.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to look at it.
Nice. Now, this next one's a fun question, and I like to caveat this with, I know that you didn't get where you are on your own. You've been surrounding yourself with great people and talented people like RJ. There's a little shout out to RJ.
Yeah, RJ's
and, great guy. And the great team that you guys have built over there. So I know that, but you've certainly achieved a level of success. So I want to ask you, what would your UX design superhero name be?
I think kind of going back to that superpower, it'd be Mr. Invisible.
Ooh.
And the reason I say that is, you know, again, I think that to be a good designer, it's not to kind of be present and say like, hey, I'm over here and look at all this cool stuff that I did, but to kind of step in the background and help lead them to the right place and, you know, kind of get rid of those roadblocks again. And I think just kind of being in the background, kind of disappearing is, you know, the way to do that. So silently, invisibly guiding them.
Oh, that's so good. I know that my artist, Caesar Lemus, at Firehead, PHYRHED, is going to have a lot of fun drawing your character.
Great. Yeah, I look forward to it.
Awesome. One of my favorite lines from Tron was when he said, I fight for the users. How do you fight for your users?
So, yeah, again, it kind of goes back to that sort of leading the client, you know, being someone kind of helping them, you know, through the kind of the thick of everything, right? So not just writing down, you know, a list of the features that they want, but kind of looking at the problems that, you know, they're trying to solve, and kind of helping them find the right things, you know, for the users. So I like Mike Montero did this talk a little bit ago, and he talked about making your clients happy. Mm-hmm. But that's not what our, he says, that's not what we're there for. That's what people think is like, you got to make them happy. We're hired to do something for them, right? We're hired to do something mm-hmm. great for their customers and for their company. And sometimes they don't, that's a different thing than what they think they want. And so it's not about making them happy, but doing the right thing. And so I really like that, that kind of sentiment.
I love that. Yeah. We're being entrusted with a job they cannot do on their own.
Right.
Yeah,
bad news is hard sometimes to give. And, you know, he kind of talks about that with a doctor example, right?
Right.
You can't just say, oh, no, you're fine. You don't have, you know, any health issues. Well, you have to tell them the hard truth sometimes. And that's being a good doctor. So that's the same. I think looking at it from a UX perspective, it's the same thing we have to do is, yeah, this is not great news, but I want to do the right thing.
So true. So true. And kind of branching off into leadership, you know, as I know that you do a lot as well over there at Universal Mind, you're leading a team of designers. And it's kind of like, that's the hard part, I think, as a leader, because we do have to say it straight, but we also don't want to come off arrogant. We don't want to deflate our team. So it's kind of, I think that a lot of that comes, and please chime in too on this, but I think a lot of that comes with just being in the foxhole with these people. Right. And earning that respect, earning that trust, so that when you do deliver that straight message that's important for them to hear, it's they know your intention is not to harm them. It's not to deflate them and put them, you know, make them feel like they're not capable, of course. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that I think kind of leads into like just having a good method of, you know, critiques and opening it up to everyone, and everyone's on an even playing field. I feel, you know, at our company, as far as, you know, kind of how we talk to each other about and give feedback on designs and trying to distance ourselves from the design itself and know that we're just trying to make a really good product. And so it's not, you're not being kind of trying to offend anyone or, you know, hurt their feelings in any way if you're giving critique on there. So I think everyone understands that. Then it makes being in a leadership position a little bit easier because, you know, everyone has a say in it. And it's not just that my say is more than someone else's. You just sort of, you listen and you decide if that's right for that problem that you're solving.
I love that. I appreciate you touching on design critique as well, and the idea of including everyone in that. I think that's that's brilliant. I think that that's a great takeaway for all of us, just to, especially those in design leadership roles, to really involve the team in that process. And it for one, it it reinforces the fact that everybody matters on the team and what they think and also it makes us better, right? Like
right.
you wrote one of your articles. I'm trying to remember. I think it's the You Suck at Design article where you're talking about, which was a great one, by the way. I'll be sure to link these up, Defenders, in the show notes. All the things we're talking about. But
okay, yeah,
but I love the story about the guy robbing the bank with lemon juice on his face.
Right. Yeah, that was a great story, and I remembered kind of reading that some time ago, that that kind of general story, and it was something that I started to think about because I was always so hard on myself, you know, for things, and then I kind of looked into it, and I'm like, oh, it's the Dunning-Kruger effect, I believe it's called.
Yes.
And that's something that I was like, wow, I think more people should know about this. You know, again, it comes from that personal level of like, I need to figure something out for myself, and maybe it will resonate with other people. And that's something I feel like I've always been very hard on myself, you know, from a design perspective, like this isn't good enough, or what are you doing in this industry? Why? I don't think you belong here. Internal voices, you know, and so it's kind of interesting to understand that there are other people that feel that way. And it's something that has been kind of documented of, you know, in some of their studies. So,
Francisco, everybody feels that way. And
yes.
And I will tell you, I do too.
Yes.
And every time I get on this mic and I get to talk to wonderful people like you and talented people like you, I just feel like, who are you to do this? There's that imposter syndrome voice that we all struggle with. So I was going to ask you, and I was going to say, how do you overcome it? But that's just completely not a good question, because I don't think we ever overcome it. But how do we cope with it? What's your best advice for like coping with that imposter syndrome voice that's always trying to bring us down?
I think it's just to honestly just keep going. And I think the power is of knowledge, right? Of knowing. Once you know what something is, you recognize it and you understand it, you can get past it. And that's, I think, part of the reason why I try to share things like that, is to show people that maybe don't recognize that. You know, so it's like the Joshua Tree story. I don't know if you've heard that.
No.
So the Joshua Tree story is where the guy's talking about, and I'm kind of paraphrasing here.
Sure.
He got a book about different trees, and you know, he read about that specific tree, and then he began to recognize that tree when he and saw that it was kind of not, I don't know if it was everywhere, but he just recognized and saw it a lot of places. So it's basically saying that, you know, once you understand something, you start to notice it and see it in the world. And I think that's the same thing of, you know, recognizing these sort of like these things inside of us that are telling us that, you know, we're not good enough, or these certain kind of quirks with our brain and our mind that do certain things and cause us to think one way or another. Once you recognize that, it still is not going to prevent it from happening necessarily, but at least you know it's there, and you can kind of go, okay, that's just that thing happening again, and then you can kind of walk past it.
That's a great, great lesson. And I wanted to tell you too, Francisco, that your humility is, I think, what makes you a great design leader. And the fact that, you know, you do wrestle just like we all do. And I think it's great that your transparency in sharing that, because it just helps us all go, hey, we're all human, right? We all have the similar struggles. And I think that's what makes you a great design leader, is your humility in recognizing that, but also just moving forward, moving on, and just striving for excellence.
Thanks. Yeah, I think it's an important message. I don't think people, I don't know if they talk about it a ton. I don't know if it's just hard or just, you know, what the reason is. But I think also part of our sort of world right now kind of contributes to that. And I think in that same article talking about, you know, Dribbble and all these different sites that showcase all these things, and you see this real perfect, perfectly designed things in the world. And it gives this sort of false notion that if your work isn't to that level, you know, maybe you're working on something that isn't really super slick, and you would consider eye candy. You're just working on like something in healthcare. You know, it's just a kind of a problem that you're never going to make something that necessarily is going to be, you know, on the Dribbble homepage, or like, you know, voted up on Behance or whatever. And I think that kind of causes people, and I know it has for me too, when I wasn't working on things, to kind of like feel like I'm not working on good enough stuff, or I'm not a good enough designer to be there, or whatever. And I think that's that unfortunately is not true. I think, you know, you have just as much to offer as that other person. You just have to make it happen. You know, just do it on the side, you know, do your thing and explore that, because, you know, everyone struggles with that feeling.
Mm, so good. Francisco, this is the last question of this segment, but it's a big one. And I know you think a lot about this stuff, and you've written a lot about interfaces and what our interfaces will feel like in the future. Also a great article. What does the future of UX look like to you?
Yeah, so I will answer that with two quotes that I really like. So the first one is, the future is already here. It's just not very evenly distributed. And that's William Gibson. And the second is, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, but Michio Kaku. And he says that to our ancestors, we will look like wizards. And for us, our grandchildren will look like gods.
Oh,
so
wow.
I think those two quotes really kind of encompass my sort of philosophy on that, because I believe that, you know, if you look at around us in the world, there's a lot of simple patterns that, you know, you can look at, for example, you know, which side of the road people drive on, you know, the measurement system, you know, the even outlets here, you know, for here versus Europe and other places in the world, you know, that I think shows that there's a lot of things that need to happen for the, you know, in certain places, the future is already here, right? So if you look at San Francisco, they have a lot of things going on there, and they're experimenting and doing all this, have these cool, you know, robots and hotels and all this crazy stuff. And then you go to India and somewhere on the street, and that person is living a completely different life. And so I think really the future of UX is about, like, right now, it's about kind of balancing those experiences that are out there in the world and helping kind of equalize, you know, what's out there. So I think it's about kind of looking at, you know, the balance even between digital and the physical world. So right now we're seeing a lot of kind of digital native people, right? You have people that are growing up with screens and technology, and it's just like a normal part of life.
Yeah.
And, you know, they crave that kind of physical, you know, tactile kind of interactions, that they like to go out and try different kinds of foods and interact with friends in that, or vinyl records and books, you know, we're seeing growth with those things again. So I think there's this kind of interesting balance for designers, and kind of tying back to that storytelling aspect, you know, we talked about a little bit before, you know, I think it's less about what's under the glass and what that looks like. And I think as designers, you know, we'll have to look at what's outside of the screen. That is going to be, you know, through storytelling and telling what that kind of user story is, you know, that full story, not just what's under the glass.
Wow. Boom. That's awesome. So Francisco, let's wrap up the show with the imparting of superpowers. What's one habit that you believe contributes to your success?
I think it's just trying to get into a good kind of cadence of, you know, how much you, like, for example, you can get kind of caught up in a lot of things that are really, you know, kind of just looking at inspirational things specifically. You know, you can get caught up into, you know, looking at, you know, too much of that kind of eye candy or something in your process, or spending too much time in emails and stuff like that. So, you know, I think really, you know, for me, it's like finding that kind of balance with that, you know, kind of day-to-day stuff. And I think the bigger part of that to me is the always ABL, always be learning, right? So always trying to learn from everything. And I find that in all of my kind of how I organize myself, I always try to look at that and see where I'm failing at that, and treat everything sort of as that habit, that kind of habit forming, as kind of a cycle, right? It's a design cycle kind of. So you kind of look at, like, where is this not working and where is it working? And so I spend too much time in email, or I spend too much time looking at, you know, inspirational, you know, kind of things, and balance out things. And I think it's kind of a never ending cycle, right? Just kind of always trying to learn from that.
Absolutely. Great answer. And I think what I've learned about you, and I know I'm still getting to know you, but I've read a lot of what you've written. And I think what I've learned about you from a distance is that you really are seriously concerned with why you're doing something, mm-hmm. not just how or what, it's why. And I think that's one thing that I think that's a really, really great superpower also.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point.
Awesome. So what's your most invincible UX resource or tool you can recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, I would say for me, it's I love the library. I like going to the library, actually.
Oh, nice.
I think it's just...
The one with actual physical books?
Yeah, a physical place. I think it's just... There's so much there that you can discover, and you can look around on different sites and different resources, but we all kind of fall into our patterns of like what sites we go to, and the information, you know, begins to be kind of the same. And so, you know, going to a library, you can kind of find, you know, something on the shelf, you know, mix of things that you might not ever have come across, and you wouldn't probably get from the people that you necessarily follow on Twitter, or you know, in a Medium article that you've read or whatever, because you follow the same patterns. So it's kind of nice to just go and explore a physical space and that's full of knowledge, literally. And so the other part of that too is I listen to a lot of podcasts. You know, this is one. It's great.
Oh,
and
thank you.
I think there's also, you know, kind of looking at podcasts that aren't necessarily just design too.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's good to listen to other things that talk about something else that might interest you, and that look at different things in the world. And that's kind of sometimes how things inspire me as far as even in a design or something I want to write about, that kind of triggers something in my own world. So looking at someone else's world triggers something in what I do, and then I kind of can tie it back to that. So I think it's... That's a great tool, I think, going to library and podcasts.
Love it. Love it. Yes. So in this digital world, I love the that you referenced kind of an analog craft, which I think is just awesome. And I would be surprised if you didn't inspire a lot of our defenders to actually do that, to go take a trip to the library and just explore, not even have an agenda, not even have, I'm going to go look for a book on design or programming or whatever, not even have an agenda, just go and explore, right? And just go and look, maybe pull one off the shelf and just start browsing through it and give yourself some time, break away from the world, the chaos, put your phone on airplane mode.
All right.
Ah,
yeah,
love
absolutely.
It. So good. And speaking of library, if you could recommend one book to our listeners, what would it be and why?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, you know, I think you've had this author on, but The Best UI is No UI.
Oh, yes.
So I think that's a...
Golden Krishna.
Yeah, yes. And I actually don't agree with all of the book's points. Maybe I'll write about that at some point.
Sure.
But I think that, you know, the premise, you know, that he has there, that everything can be solved, or, you know, a lot of people are focused on solving things with some kind of app or visible interface. I think that it's a really good message for designers today to kind of take home and think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think you can always get away from that. And, you know, part of our job is, you know, being hired to do some of that stuff. But I think you can begin to really pull away from thinking that everything is solved that way. And I think we're going to have to. And I think one example of that is like the chatbots and those kind of methods. People are getting hung up on, you know, doing, you know, just using those all the time.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the article, but I saw an article talking about like buying movie tickets or something and how many steps it took within a chatbot versus just going to the site and doing it. So it's just sort of becoming obsessed. You know, I think the message is like becoming obsessed with a certain kind of solution or method of doing something and not really understanding that it's actually maybe not the best way, right? You're just kind of more focused on that, you know, it's the cool factor or whatever it might be.
Such a great answer. Fully agree with you. And don't get me started on Siri, because she's helpful sometimes. But again, we start to depend too much on robots.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's just easier just to open the door with our key, like, as Golden Krishna says, you know, instead of going and do all the 11, 12 steps, whatever it is, to get the door open with our phone.
Exactly.
So totally, fully agree. Thanks for mentioning Golden. His episode was 11. Great episode with Golden.
Hey, this is Austin Knight. I'm a senior UX designer at HubSpot, and I fight for the users. You're listening to the User Defenders podcast with Jason Ogle.
So this is my last question for you in this segment, but it's one of my favorites because my heart in this show is to really help keep designers inspired with all of the overwhelming things that we have to know today. What's your best advice for aspiring UX design superheroes?
Yeah, so... I thought about that one. I have, I think, three things, and I think one of them I kind of touched on a little bit as far as like the teaching aspect. But I think it's always appreciating, you know, what people have to offer you. And this is something that I kind of learned over time that, you know, you go to work and you have this kind of expectation of maybe what you should be doing. Or looking at what, you know, that someone else is doing outside of there. And I actually wrote a post about this too, about, you know, what would Jason Santa Maria do?
Yes,
because I really looked up to him, you know, a lot when I was kind of becoming, you know, getting more into web design and app design. And, you know, it was always like, really like, I should be there. I should be doing this. You know, this guy is doing really cool stuff. And, you know, he's sitting there in, you know, New York or wherever working for a really awesome agency and doing this. And It kind of caused me to begin to almost like ignore, you know, the value of the people around me and what they had to offer to my career. Because, you know, as you pointed out, your career, you know, and your superpowers, so to speak, are not just, you know, from yourself, it's from what you've learned and absorbed from other people. And so I think that's one main point, is just to kind of look around you and realize that, you know, the people that are around you sitting next to you right now, even if it's someone that is maybe negative, you can learn something from them. You know, maybe you learn what not to do. Right.
Sure.
But you can learn from people around you and appreciate what they have to offer. And they don't have to have a big name, or some kind of high expectation you might have for them. They could just be anyone. You could learn something from them. So I think that's a really important thing to kind of, you know, advice to someone who's, you know, aspiring designer. The other thing is always to add value to things. So, you know, someone gives you something, and again, this goes back to sort of like, this is the way at least I used to think, is like, well, I'm just getting this like little part of this project, and you feel like you should be able to do more. But I think that's the wrong way to look at it. You know, I was wrong to look at it that way. Either the right way to look at it is to say, okay, here's this thing and I can make it better. I can give it back to them and it will be in a better, you know, better state than when I received it. And I think that's an important thing. And I think from my last part is just don't wait, to be asked to do something, you know, go ahead and take the opportunity to show people. And that's how, you know, I kind of Rise came about, was, you know, no one ever come up to me and say, hey, can you make a really fun thing with gestures and just kind of like really clean design and just have fun with the colors and do whatever you want. Like, no one's going to come and hire you to do that, right? You have to go out and do that thing you want to do yourself. And I just wanted to learn, like, how does it work to launch an app, and what is that process like? And what is it, you know, again, putting myself into a client's shoes, what is it like to have to kind of go through that whole process of building this product from zero to, you know, something more mature? And I think that would never have happened if I didn't just go ahead and, you know, call up Kellen and say, let's make an app, you know? So that's the, I think those three things, I think, are pretty important.
Oh, wow. So good. Stay curious, add value, take initiative. Defenders, such great advice from Francisco. Francisco, as we close, can you tell us about the one thing you're working on, you're most excited about?
Yeah, I'd love to share that. So this is through work. So at Universal Mind, another guy, Joe Johnson, and I are working on, kind of started this thing we call the lab. And I know there's a lot of labs in different agencies, and it might be a little bit, I guess, cliche by now, but the thing that we're doing with our lab is really focusing on creating product visions for companies. And so we noticed that a lot of clients, they were kind of struggling with ideas at the very front end. And a lot of times when you're in an agency, you know, you're kind of hired to do a specific thing, right? We need an app that does X. But in this case, we're seeing like some clients, you know, they might need a little bit of help before that. And how do they do that? So we created this kind of process, I guess, within the lab called story sprints. And they're broken up to three parts. So you have the forest, the trail, and then the campfire. So at the, it's 4 weeks. So at the beginning of that, you're kind of at the forest piece. So you're looking at the kind of full scope. So, you know, one example is looking at air travel. So that's big. It's a big forest, right? There's a lot of different moving parts there. But you start to kind of do some lean research and exploration and kind of pulling together kind of a picture of what that is. You create some archetypes. And then you kind of look at, okay, so what is the most important archetypes to kind of focus on? And we focus on like a customer side and then the internal side, because the internal side, you can't offer a good experience unless, you know, that internal facing person, you know, you can't, that internal facing person has to offer a good experience to the customer, you know, so they have to also be happy. Yeah. So looking at those two sides, we focus on two specific kind of archetypes within there. And then we start going down the trail. And so that trail is very focused. You're ignoring a lot of things at that point because they're obviously, again, it's a huge space, but you have to pick a path that you feel is the most viable one. And so you go down that path and you start to look at really kind of lightweight experiences. Again, we're not focusing on what's under glass. There might be a couple screens in there. There might be, you know, some other elements too. It might be just some IoT thing, you know, some IoT interactions, might be some just pure customer service. They're interacting with a person. And then finally, once that's finished, we basically kind of illustrate out this story. And it's almost like a storyboard for a film, kind of showing two characters. And we kind of give, you know, we give them a name and a story, you know, their own kind of backstory, and show them going through this world. And it's just basically a product vision. And so the campfire phase is now we're telling the story of this whole thing. And so at the end point, at the end of this 4 weeks, they have the product vision that they can share internally. You know, they can share it with customers if they want. They can share it with their, you know, their leadership or try to get investment in the company. And it's just really exciting because, you know, that we're leading, we're kind of helping lead the process and helping them understand the value of user-centered design. And it's just, to me, just kind of a really exciting thing to see, you know, customers and clients starting to really ask for and want to do instead of just diving in and saying, we want these features.
That sounds really, really intriguing, Francisco. I love also how you integrate your movie, your love for the movies in this process too, because I really see it, like the archetypes, the story arc, and and the storytelling in general. I think this is really fascinating, and I hope that you guys, I know you're kind of refining and defining this as right now, but I hope that you will share this with us in the future.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, definitely.
This is great. Francisco, as we close, why don't you tell our audience the best way to connect and to keep up with you?
Yeah, that would be on Twitter. So at @IamFinch, and then feel free to reach also through email. So Francisco@getfinch.com.
Awesome. Francisco, I am super inspired just from our time and just from being able to chat with you. I'm kind of like pumped up right now. So I thank you really for all the value you added. And I know our defenders are feeling the same way as me right now. It's been a great pleasure chatting with you. And I just want to say, fight on, my friend.
Thank you. It's been an honor to be on here.
Awesome. Love talking with Francisco. He's got such a wealth of knowledge and depth of expertise, but has managed to maintain such a genuine humility in his work. I do hope he takes me up on my nudge to start writing more again, because his gift of articulation and research really come through. I'll be sure to link to some of his writing in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, Defenders. I am humbled that you chose to spend this time with me and my super guests, and I hope you're gaining great value from the show. Just a quick reminder about our special giveaway we're doing right now. We are giving away 2 copies of Victor Yocko's new, brand new book called Design for the Mind. Victor was a super guest on episode 17. Great episode. Highly recommend checking it out if you haven't heard it already. But he and Manning Publications have generously offered 2 copies of his book that Victor himself has signed and left a note in for you. So super excited to give those away. The way that you do that is you have to leave a rating and review on iTunes. You can go to userdefenders.com/review and make sure you leave the review part so that I know who you are. And I will randomly select 2 winners after July 24th. So it has to be between July 11th and July 24th. I'll randomly select 2 winners and announce the 2 winners on the episode airing August 1st. So get to it. Thanks in advance for doing that. And good luck. We're all counting on you. I want to thank Cesar Limas for the astonishing superhero artwork, Chris Combs for the superhuman editing, and Wyman Gentry for the compelling show music. Thanks again so much for listening, and until next time, fight on, my friends.